this story of the most deadly car crash in American history, a single car crash, a limo where all the occupants died, is still taking our breath away. I'll tell you, here's one takeaway for me on that. I look at those limos, I've never thought those things look safe. Where they take, I don't know how they do it, they give it some pills, somehow the limos, the, you know, a Ford or a Hummer or something suddenly is 20 feet long. I don't know how that happens. And you see those things going around, and I think, not only does that vehicle look unsafe to me, but I don't know what's going on inside there, but I'm guessing that those people aren't buckled in and that it's just not a safe environment. It's so much fun to be in a limo. It's dangerous looking to me. Always has been. And then this happens. And how did this happen? We still don't know all of the answers yet. The wife of the driver, who also died in the crash, said that he was a good driver. He didn't have a CDL, but she said that for 20-plus years, he drove a rig and he'd been driving a limo without any incident, and he was a good driver. So why was he going so fast? Why did he run the stop sign? And how is it that with nothing else, there was no other vehicle in the collision, it didn't tumble down a hill, it was fatal to everybody? Here's my question, though. So what does this make you think about the next time they want to get on the pedal pub or the trolley or the fun stretch limo to go celebrate a party or go to or from a wedding? I mean, is this giving you second thoughts about that? Sure is me. Chris Ferroni is on a phone line. He's an ARCCA expert in forensic, scientific, and engineering solutions. I'm not exactly sure what that means, but he's on a phone line right now, and I think he's going to explain it to us. Hi, Chris. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
You're a Chicago-based business, right?
Yes, sir, I am.
What do you do?
So the firm in general, as well as myself, investigates all types of accidents. I specialize in heavy equipment and commercial motor vehicle-type accidents and failure analysis, along with the driver conduct evaluation and regulatory compliance.
Your family owned some transportation businesses?
We did. We were very fortunate. For 110 years, we owned several bus companies here in Chicago. We just sold the business a little over a year ago. My grandfather, my father, my uncle, and myself ran the businesses. I retired after 42 years when we sold the businesses.
Your degrees in mechanical and automotive engineering?
Yes, sir. That's true.
Well, then you're the perfect guest for this, aren't you?
Well, we'll see. I hope I can help.
Well, what do you think about that crash? And what do you think about my general apprehension about those vehicles?
Well, it's a fair concern for parents or anybody who is getting on a vehicle like that. You know, obviously we make choices like that to be safe so we can, you know, enjoy ourselves at a party
right. Without
having to put ourselves at risk of driving.
Yeah.
So, of course, the assumption is you want to be taken care of and being taken care of safely, and you have to select the proper operator that is going to protect you.
There's a way to know?
In essence, in a very general sense, there is. The type of operator that you want to select is an interstate motor carrier who is registered with the US DOT and is given a registration number, and they have to follow very strict guidelines for the driver, drug and alcohol training, drug and alcohol monitoring, vehicle maintenance, and all kind of vehicle record keeping, and they're subject to blind audits by the DOT.
You told me off the air today that there's a safer program. What is that?
Sure. So the US DOT now provides a website, and I'll just give it to you. It's called safer.fmcsa.dot.gov. And if you take the potential motor carrier who you're going to hire, your limo company or your party bus, and put their DOT number into that, it will give you a safety snapshot of that company, which includes accidents, fatalities, vehicles out of service due to poor maintenance, or drivers out of service being out of compliance.
Okay, I'll put that website on our Facebook page and on our website, on my Facebook page and on our website, with this podcast. We're obviously podcasting the shows after we're done. We put them back up on the air. You can listen to them. And right next to that will be the link to the site that you just described. Well, that would be interesting. If I was going to then get something for prom or for a wedding party or something like that, I could go to this safer website, type in the number, and then it would tell me what the history is on this company, huh?
That is correct. But the one caveat is the motor carrier has to be a interstate carrier. If you are an intrastate, in other words, solely within Illinois, you are not issued a number by the government, and therefore you couldn't check. So what I would recommend is always try to hire an interstate motor carrier.
What do you think of those cars? How do they get a limo to be that long anyway?
Well, in sort of very general sense, they take generally a brand new SUV or a brand new maybe Lincoln Town Car produced by Ford or General Motors or whoever, and they actually saw it in half in a particular location of the vehicle where they want to separate it, and then they separate it 10, 12 feet, whatever the distance they want to elongate it by. They extend the frame rails or the structure. They fabricate sheet metal to give the same appearance as the doors and everything on the original automobile. They outfit and trim the interior to have couches or chairs and lights and skylights and a bar, perhaps. And essentially, you as a result, get this limousine.
It just looks too long. It looks too like if there was a collision, it would tear apart. It just doesn't look safe to me.
Well, obviously, as we did say off the air, there are good limousine manufacturers, and obviously there's probably a fair share that cut corners and don't do a good job. Of course, the user, anybody who's renting the limousine, you wouldn't know the difference. So, like I said, if you could always make choices, or if you have to make a choice, if you use an interstate carrier, chances are you're going to get a better vehicle.
You said off the air, think about this, and I hadn't until you mentioned it, but say you buy that SUV, and it's for 8 passengers, maybe, and a certain amount of weight that the vehicle has and that the car might have. Then you cut it in half, put a bunch of metal in between, and then instead of 8 passengers, you got 20 people in that vehicle. The weight is a lot greater. Now, roll that thing along the road at 60 miles an hour. Now you got to stop. Well, the brakes may be the same brakes that were in the SUV when it was manufactured. With all of this additional weight rolling forward, that I never thought about that, but they got to get special or better or, I don't know, more brakes. That just, again, seems to be another level of concern.
Absolutely. Hit the nail on the head. The vehicle, as it comes out as sort of a family vehicle, is designed with its components to, as you just said, manage, the 5,000 to 6,000 pounds that it's designed to carry. When you turn it into a limousine, it could easily double in weight. And so you hope that the manufacturer that's converting this into the limousine has taken that into consideration, upgraded the brakes, the steering, the suspension, wheel bearings, and other technical items that are all load-bearing and that are, weight-sensitive and then become safety-sensitive.
Chris Ferroni's on a phone line. He's an expert in this sort of thing. Can you tell? His Chicago company, he's from this area, but he's been doing this all around the country for years. Maybe you've got a question, a comment, an observation, too. Here's another thing I want you to answer, Chris, after a break. I know you haven't studied this case any more than maybe some of us have, but isn't it odd that without another vehicle really being involved, it hit an SUV, another vehicle that was on the road or in a parking lot, but there was nobody in it. It spun that thing around. So that really wasn't what led to all of the deaths. It didn't tumble down a hill. I mean, what do you think happened that caused everybody to perish? It's the strangest thing, beyond being tragic. Talking right now about that limousine crash, which everybody died. Chris Ferroni is an expert in forensics, scientific, and engineering solutions. He's a Chicago guy. By the way, what's the name of your company? Am I doing the name of your company when I read all of that stuff? ARCCA Experts, is that you?
Correct. It's you could pronounce it ARCA. It's an acronym, but it's pronounced ARCA. That's correct.
All right. I want to put in a couple calls, too, because, you know, I said, gee, how is it that everybody died? But Bill, like some of you, wanted to say what? You're on WGN, Bill. Hi.
Yeah, according to what I saw on the news and what I read, too, that was a T road he came to.
Yep.
And he's supposed to stop, but I don't know if he's going too fast and didn't see it or what. He probably was. But he went through that parking lot and hit that other SUV or what it was,
yeah.
Killed the two people in the parking lot, and then they said he went down this embankment and slammed into a big tree head-on because it was so much speed and so powerful crash, it knocked the engine almost halfway back into the van, into the limo.
Yeah, so...
Now, he must have been traveling at 70, 80 mile an hour or more. And my theory is, why do you even allow those type of cars on the road? Why would you be allowed to reconstruct a vehicle to be that length of strength of that time? If you want that many people, get a bus that's made for it.
I think those are all good points and questions. Thanks, Bill. Go ahead, Christopher. What do you want to say to that call?
Well, I think the gentleman is generally correct. As we said off the air, the unfortunate tragedy here is all these people were killed in this accident. The chances are it was not because they hit that SUV. It was most likely because of their coming to a sudden stop, hitting this ravine or a tree or wherever they ended up hitting. And since most of them, I'm sure, were unbelted, free bodies inside the vehicle, it was a horrible moment that they were just free inside the vehicle, floating around and crashing into hard surfaces. And I'm sure that was what led to their unfortunate passing.
They don't have to wear seatbelts when they're passengers in those cars, do they? Do you think that they should reconsider that in general?
I do think they should. Motor coach regulations were changed a few years ago. I don't have it off the top of my head, but suffice it to say, in the last 3 years, production of new motor coaches similar to Greyhound buses mandate seatbelts, and school buses have had seatbelts for years. And I think that's a trend that should be continued into this type of industry as well. Absolutely.
I'm going to call you again. We'll visit maybe on this topic or something along these lines again another day. But you've been really helpful, Chris. I appreciate your time and your expertise.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Chris Ferroni, ARCA experts in forensic, scientific, and engineering solutions. That's what they do.